YU Connects is not only a matchmaking website. We often hold community forums like these. It's open to the entire community. Anyone can join. It's a tzedakah, self-funded, and it is located with appreciation on the YU campus. We have the ability of having input from YU Rosh Yeshiva, a wonderful advisory board, and wonderful leaders that guide us. YU Connects also has an amazing database through Saw You at Sinai, where matchmakers make suggestions and see the profiles. This is discreet, it's secure, and Baruch Hashem, 600 engagements in a little over 12 years, about an average of one a week. We just celebrated the 600 milestone. There are hundreds of dates each week, 4,000 members, and nearly 100 volunteer connectors. Now, certainly YU Connects is not the answer for everyone, but it is one method of hishtadlus, and we encourage everyone to try many. We're constantly at YU Connects trying new initiatives. We have a candidate podcast, personal mentoring, a super website with lots of resources, WhatsApp chats about events, special activities, and of course, a special focus on educational forums like tonight. We'll send out an email tomorrow with more information and links. There's also a new initiative. YU Connects recently hired 3 rabbeim to visit the base medrash and establish a rapport with the young men there. It makes it the norm for the men to get suggestions, and it's working wonderfully well. With this, I'm going to call Rebbetzin Rivki Greunlich to start the panel. I hope you enjoy the night.
We are really so fortunate to have all 3 of these amazing people with us. I'm going to just start, like Margie said, with the questions that you all submitted, and we're going to start with Malki. Malki, if you can share with us, what is the importance of a dating resume, and should it include a photo?
Firstly, I want to thank Margie Glatt, Rachel Novick, Efrat Sabalevsky, Rivki Freinlach, for everyone for organizing. Thank you for the shuls for hosting. I feel very honored and humbled to be sitting on this panel with men of my actual rebellion from when I was in Stern, Roy Penner, and with the director of the Counseling Center and the Rebbetzin of Young Israel of Oceanside. I know how much the community and the students really seek your guidance, so it's really a big privilege to be here. Okay, so I'm going to start off with what is the importance of a dating resume and should it include a picture? So let's call it out. Resumes make everyone cringe. People are so resistant to it. They'll say things like, used to be, we didn't have resumes and people still got married. Well, honestly, in those good old days, they also didn't have cell phones, we also didn't have social media, we also didn't have movie streaming. Life has gotten a lot faster paced, and the way we access information is different and faster than it used to be. People don't make phone calls, they text. And the world has really shifted to a much faster pace in terms of shidduchim as well. We can argue which way is better, which way is more authentic, which way has the right Torah values, but that would be a much larger conversation and probably a whole panel on itself. So I'm just going to simplify for the sake of time. Resumes are an easy way to remind someone who you are and that you're available. That's all that it is. When you meet with, I'm going to use the term connector because at YU Connects we call matchmakers connectors. So when you meet with a connector or a community matchmaker or a Rebbetzin or a teacher or anyone that's going to be helping to set you up, they're not going to necessarily remember in 6 months from now what's your exact age, whether you went to MMI, whether you went to Tiferet, whether you're a Camp Kaylee or a Camp Hask girl, so whether you daven at Yilk or, you know, Young Israel Woodmere. So it's really just a way to streamline the information and make it easier for people that are trying to help you. Just last week, I had a young man who said to me, I was trying to set him up, and he said to me, I think I'm going to decline because the resume doesn't speak to me. And I said to him, perfect. The resume is not supposed to speak to you. She is going to speak to you. So I said, you won't regret meeting her. This is a small snapshot of her background experience. Use it as a springboard for conversation. When you meet her, you can ask her why she switched from TJJ to Michlelet, why she chose the seminary that she wanted to go to. I guarantee you that the person behind the resume is far more interesting. He went out and he thanked me. So, okay, let's just use it as a springboard. So now for pictures, I'm going to take a deep breath. Okay, I'm going to take the plunge. Everyone has their own opinions, and I'm just going to tell you what works for me. I like to get a picture to remind me who the person is. I meet with dozens of daters each week, and in order for me to remember who is who, I just like to keep a picture with the resume. It doesn't have to be on the resume, it could be sent separately, but I tell everyone a picture just reminds me who you are. It shouldn't be a silly picture, it does not need to be a full-length picture, it should not be a picture where three people are squished next to you and I don't have any idea who you are. Just a regular, normal picture, like you would post like on your LinkedIn profile. I can tell you that the Rebbeim that I've spoken to at YU, and I'm sure Rabbi Penner can agree with this, really encourage their Talmidim that B'nai Torah should not be focusing on women's pictures, and I think that that's really a great message that we can all encourage our sons. So let's change the focus of using the resumes as a springboard for conversation, not a means to nix a shidduch idea. And a picture can be used as a very basic way of identifying a person, and not more than that.
Amazing. Thank you. Anybody want to add to that? Okay. If Malki says it, it must be true. That's what I...
Yes, we trust Malki with everything. Okay, our next question is for Rabbi Penner. Rabbi Penner, do you believe we should check out references? And if so, what are some of the proper questions we should be asking?
I think it depends on how closely you're looking at the resume in the first place and how closely you're checking out each person. References are helpful if you're narrowing down between a number of possibilities of who to date. It's very important to ask the right questions to the right reference. I'm constantly getting questions as a rabbi of one of these students, things that I really wouldn't know very much about. Use them well. More importantly, ask just a few questions. I'll tell you what I do on the receiving end, and I don't know if everyone does this. I might be able to get away with it because people assume I'm too busy to answer more than a couple of questions. But I do it for a different reason. When someone reaches out to me about a shidduch question, a reference, so I'll say, I'm very happy to speak about this person. I'll tell you all that I know, but please limit it to 4 or 5 questions. And I do that not because I'm worried about how much time it may take, because this is very important work, and it's kedai for me to spend as much time as it's necessary. But the question really becomes, how many things are truly important to you? What are the most important things to you? And beyond that, do you really need to know everything before you go on a date? The process of dating is not just about learning about a future spouse. It's really about learning about yourself. Deciding what is it that is really important to me. And this is one of the challenges sometimes when parents are asking the questions. The question is, did they have a conversation with their child to know which are the most important questions to ask? What are the most important things to you? And that's what I start my conversations with when I'm on the receiving end. I said, I'm very happy to ask the questions, but what are the most important things that you want to know about? There's no right answer to that. There is no right answer because everyone is looking for different things. But beyond 4 or 5 questions, at that point you're getting into silly things that aren't really going to make a difference. The one other thing that I ask as someone who's on the receiving end of references is I ask the person, well, what is the person you're asking me about looking for? And it's good to tell a reference what the person you're asking about is looking for, because then they also are able to provide better answers. It's all a process of deciding what are the most key things. We all have things that are red lines. I'm not even sure if there should be red lines, but we all have things that we think are the most important issues. Good. Ask those few questions, check out maybe 2 of the references and see if it's there. Beyond that, that's what dating is for, to be able to get to know the person.
Hi, everybody, and thank you again so much for organizing and everything that you do. I would say, just to really piggyback on what Rabbi Penner said, when a reference gets called, we're also, because we usually care about the person that put us on the resume, we're also a little bit, thinking about who is calling, and we're not filtering, that's not our job, but if something is egregious, we will notice it. And so people do need to be careful. You know, sometimes the questions just go on and on, like you said. There was one that kept asking me about, why did this person stay home for Shabbos? But also, why doesn't she stay home for Shabbos? Why does she go to shul early, but why does she sometimes stay home? It was such repetitive questions, and I really found myself kind of discouraging of this person when the other person asked me about it. Obviously, I think that they should go out. I think that they did go out, but that's something to just keep in mind, that you're presenting the person that you're calling about. So, you know, be careful a little bit about that, I think.
You can keep the mic. Okay. I'm going to ask the next question of Dr. Muscat, so I'm going to have her keep the mic. Now that we know about resumes and we know about what questions to ask, can you help us get an understanding of what are some common red flags that we should be looking for?
Okay. So when it comes to red flags, I think that there's a couple of different layers. I think there's the obvious red flags that everybody does know about, but I think need to be mentioned and enumerated, which is any type of controlling behavior. Anybody that you find is telling your child, don't go out with your friends, don't say this, don't wear that, questioning them about their behaviors, limiting things that they want to do, questioning them about hobbies that they have, judging them in ways that, you know, make them feel very uncomfortable. But certainly anything that's controlling, anything that's condescending, that's what we would call verbally abusive, any kind of name calling, shaming of any sort, these are absolute red flags. Obviously, any physical abuse, any touching somebody physically in a way that makes them feel uncomfortable. So these are clearly red flags. There's also things that are either, they're kind of like more yellow or orange flags, things that you should look out for, as well as things that you may not be able, that are not tangible, but you notice. So you want to look for when your child, let's say your daughter, if they're not feeling comfortable in any way, if you feel that they're very overly anxious than they should be, if they're keeping things from you, we're going to talk about this a little bit later. You know, they're allowed to have their privacy, but if you feel that they're, you know, covering up something, they're covering up some text, if the friends might, sometimes we see this a lot at Stern College, that the friends really are very concerned. And, you know, if you hear that from a friend, we're very concerned, she's not telling us certain things. So, or even if you have a conversation with your child, let them know. If there's a text or if there's a conversation that you feel that you are hiding, that's a sign that something is not, that something is probably a red flag there. There's certain things in the relationships themselves that are problematic. If a person, another, we call it a yellow flag, a red flag, if a person doesn't want the person they're dating to see a therapist for any reason, they're kind of cutting off their sources of support. Everybody at some point needs some help. So if the person is not allowing the other person to get that help, that's not appropriate either. You know, we say it should bring out the best in a person, right? A good match should bring out the best in a person. It's not always going to all the time. There's stresses in relationships. But if in general you're finding that the person is tense, uneasy, those I think are some, again, lower flags. The other are more like, so those are relationship red flags. There's also some personal red flags, things you want to look for. You want to look for the person to be functional in whatever area they're doing. So if it's learning, are they learning well? Are they able to finish things that they start? Are they able to take projects and, you know, whether it's school or jobs? Are they people that are functional and doing the things that they start to do? And do they have relationships in their life? That's another thing you want to look for. If the person kind of is very much alone and doesn't have any people that they turn to, yeah, that's something also that I would look for.
Thank you so much. See, this is why we brought them all here. Okay. Next question for Malki. Can you please talk to us about when our children should get genetic testing? What types are available and how should that process go?
Okay. This is a really important question that really warrants this public forum, attention at a public forum like this. So I'm really glad it's being addressed. Thank you. There are basically two types of testing. There's closed testing and open testing. Closed testing is often done by Dor Yesharim, which is where they do a blood test. Very often it's done in high school or after. And they're going to give you a number instead of your results. When you're dating someone, you compare the numbers through Dor Yesharim, and they'll tell you if you're compatible or not. At YU, a much more common form of testing is open testing, and J-Screen is the popular one on campus. It's a very simple procedure. You fill out a form online, they mail you a kit, you spit into a test tube, and you mail it back. That's the whole procedure. And then they'll contact you to give you your results, which is your own private medical information, not to be shared with anyone. No one, the Shatan does not need to know the results of your testing. Open testing often covers many more diseases, whether it's fatal or not, and it empowers the person to know their own genetic background. One more thing that really needs to be stressed is that if someone is a carrier, it doesn't mean a thing. There is no stigma. There's no higher risk of developing anything. It's simply that if they are, unlikely, married to someone who has the same carrier status, then there's a potential for difficulty. So once you're at a point that you feel comfortable with the person that you're dating, you have a discussion about the results of your genetic testing. I often find that the right time is when they're, you know, quote-unquote, dropping shadchan, which is, you know, after 3 dates, 5 dates, at that point you know that this is someone that you want to continue with, and it's the right time to be discussing that. Usually it's a 2-minute discussion. You're not a carrier for this, I'm a carrier for that, we're all good, and it's fine. If the couple does find that they're carriers for the same thing, then that's when we refer them to a genetic counselor and for rabbinic guidance, and then they're gonna help decide whether it's worthwhile for them to continue dating. But we really wish that everyone took care of this before they started dating, and we're still educating new daters about this. Many of our modern Orthodox schools, they aren't offering genetic testing in high school, but it's pretty standard in the Beis Yaakov, so it's a work in progress. Personally, very recently, I've had quite a few couples that have started dating, and they either haven't done genetic testing or they've done different types that aren't easily compared. And it's really been a lot of heartache when they, you know, when they continue dating and they get very deep into like the heart stage of the relationship, and then they're faced with these decisions. So, because once you initiate the test takes about 3 to 4 weeks to get the results. So that waiting period could be excruciating if you're in the middle of a relationship and you don't know if it's going to progress or not. So why wait? The results are going to be the same if you get tested at 18 or if you get tested at 24. Why are we waiting till we're in the middle of a relationship to get tested? So that's why all the homework for all the parents here is to go home and have a conversation with your kids and say, have you done this? If not, this is how you do it. And it's really one of the easiest ways to prepare yourself for dating. Actually, J-Screen has a coupon code, JScreen50. If you put that in the, you know, in the coupon area, it'll give you $50 off. And so everyone here is welcome to use that code tonight.
I couldn't agree more with that, that presentation. Absolutely have to do.
Agreed 100%. Okay, Rabbi Penner.
Yes.
Is financial independence important before our child dates? The questioner says, I want my son to attend graduate school before he dates. Isn't that the right approach?
No. there are several things to consider here. The first is, you know, as Dr. Muscat said, a person doesn't necessarily have to have succeeded as much as be a person who in general is functional and succeeding. A person doesn't have to land their first job to necessarily be able to tell if it's a person who's going to be able to get a job. In theory, of course, kids should be financially independent. And of course, if it's a situation where the parents can't support the kids, there's really no other choice. The kids are going to have to be financially independent. However, in today's very challenging dating world, to take a person offline for all of those years is a risk that I know as a parent I wouldn't be willing to take. If it's the right person, you'll for the most part figure it out. It's easy to say that. It's easy to say that, and of course there are parents who simply do not have the financial wherewithal to support a couple no matter what. And if that's the situation, one has to be honest with their children. You can't do what you can't do. But to wait until a person is 25, 26, when it could very well have been that they would have met their bashert many years before, is pretty risky in the kinds of environment that would bring us together here tonight to try to figure out. We're here to learn, but we're also here because we're a little nervous. We're a little nervous for our own children. We're a little nervous for our own grandchildren, for somebody. And I don't think that a person needs to be financially independent by that point. It's wonderful if it works out, but I wouldn't miss my life partner for that aspect. What would you say? What do you advise me?
That's what we always say. Ask your rabbi. I don't know.
All right, next question. Dr. Muscat, how do we help our daughters maintain confidence when they are constantly being declined by boys? I want to calm her down when she gets anxious, but it's so hard. What is the right thing for me to say?
So this is a hard question, an important question, and I think we're all wondering that same thing. And like Rabbi Penner said, I think we're all here because we care about our children and want them to feel good. And what I'm going to say is not something that's easy to do, and there's no perfect, and we're all in the same boat. So, and that's kind of part of the answer. So the first thing I will say is the way the question is phrased is about girls. I'm going to answer it mostly about the women, but I will say that dating is not emotionally so easy for boys all the time either. So we do have to keep that in mind. They also have self-esteem. They also get down. They also get disappointed. And because it's expected that it's easier for them, their threshold for when they kind of feel bad about themselves is a little bit lower, meaning if a couple of people say no to them, you know, they really feel like, what is wrong with them? That's not supposed to happen. They're supposed to have the pick. So we do have to keep that in mind. I think how we approach them might be similar, might be a little bit different. So we'll try to keep that in mind as well. It's not just the girls. So I think this is a challenge, but I think I'm going to say that it really comes from our own, as much as we can as parents, from our working on ourselves in various ways. So first of all, the first thing to keep in mind is when a girl is complaining that she's feeling low, she's feeling bad about herself, it's important to validate that. There's a lot of ways in which the particular feelings that have to do with dating are really painful. I would say specifically rejection and loss also, right? Relationships that start and don't work out. These are very painful feelings, and I think it just doesn't work, you know, as parents, to kind of tell them not to feel that. So give them as much space as they need. Also, you know, they're gonna show you the worst of it sometimes. So also understand that. Even if they're wallowing in something, or you think it's enough, or you know, you think they're taking it very hard, it doesn't mean that they're like that to the outside world. So first of all, give them as much space as they can. Help them name the feeling. Explain to them that it's very normal. There's ups and downs with it. In general, if a person has the feeling, names the feelings, eventually it should start to subside a little bit. I just saw an article that my colleague sent to me that said something very nice, that when someone's going through a hard time, your child, you could ask them if they need help, hug, or to be heard. And that's kind of the idea. You really want to ask them, what do you need right now? Now, what we want to stay away from, if we can, so one thing is to let them have the feelings. The other is to build up their confidence. So how do we do that? It really has to do with how we're viewing them, and to focus, help them see their own strengths, focus on all the other things that they're succeeding with. Don't view the rejection as a rejection of you, which is something we're going to talk about later. It's very hard to do. Don't buy into it that it's really everyone is saying no and everybody else is getting yeses. If you don't buy into it, that's going to come across that you're really more positive. Encourage your daughter to have a full life and really encourage that. If she likes to take trips with her friends, encourage that. If she wants to use a time to go to Broadway, encourage that. Even if in your mind you're thinking, she should be doing this, she should be doing that, is it possible she should be doing this? And that's kind of the next point. Try as much as you can, and this is what I mean, we're all, there's no perfect in this, to hold back on some of the help or the advice that you feel is very important to give, like maybe if you had a different picture, maybe if you went to that event, maybe if you went to this person's house for lunch, maybe if you networked more. The thing is, they're not going to hear it from you, and what ends up happening is they put a defense and they almost don't take the suggestion. There's a lot of trust in this process, and we have to trust the shlichim, you know, that we have people, amazing people like Malki and the Rebbeim and other people in their lives. Encourage them to talk to those people if you can. Again, not with that same, it's even hard to do that. But you can, you know, most of them have relationships with outside people. They'll take that advice much more happily from somebody that's outside of you. So that doesn't mean you can never, but make sure that they really, really want to hear it. And then if they come to you with that, like, you know what, yeah, now I do want to talk to somebody, or can you help me with my resume? Absolutely. But if you say, maybe you should have a resume, I think if you had a resume, you know, that's gonna push them away. Okay, the other thing, it's a little bit similar to this, as much as we can, if we can prepare ourselves and our children for these feelings of rejection and loss, what does that mean? It really means, like, try to have the belief and give them the belief that they will not break from the difficult feelings. Like, it's okay to say this really hurts, you're going to be fine. They're not going to believe it, so not exactly in that way, but really you believe that they can handle rejection, they're not going to break from it. And as much as we can prepare them in advance, that there's ups and downs with this, and they might pick the one person that never had that. But most people do have that, and they might kind of narrowly focus. The other thing, just very quickly, I know, is to look for certain types of thinking. So negative filtering, black and white thinking. If they're only focusing in on the negative, negative filtering is like the Hammond phenomenon, I call it. You know, everybody was praising him, he only focused on the one that wasn't. You know, try and open up their way of thinking, if you can, in your discussions, in talking about things. Look for their coping mechanisms. Make sure you have coping mechanisms and try to help them with coping mechanisms, which include things like exercise, maybe therapy, breathing exercises, meditation, whatever has helped them cope in the past, remind them to use those or model for them that you're using some of those coping mechanisms. Oh, one more thing, sorry. One more thing that has to do with the beginning of what you said, the no's and the, again, this is not easy for them to receive, but if we can give this message before they start to date, the no's really don't, and really Monkey could speak to this, I think, because you know how the system works. The no's don't mean anything. You know, a lot of times these are, like I was saying, throwing darts. Boys get suggestions, they say no, it could have been that the suggestion, they didn't look at it that day, or a good friend of theirs suggested something else for us. They have all kinds of, like, silly rules, like, I'll only say yes from somebody who grew up in the same neighborhood as me. I'll only accept the yes from somebody who knows me really, really well, and I don't know what really, really well means. It means something else to different people. You know, it's as much as they can depersonalize the no's, and as much as they can not to get offended about who they get set up with. That's another thing. I'm only set up with so-and-so type of people. Try not to get offended by the suggestion. Somebody's trying to help. It doesn't mean that that's what people think of you.
I think also I would add that, this is the rabbi thing to say, that there is a conversation to have with our children if we're able. Sometimes they fall into dating, so you don't really get that opportunity to have a pre-dating conversation. But if you do, emuna has to be part of that conversation. There are not that many things that our kids have faced where their emuna was really challenged. It is getting harder to get into certain schools, so they may have faced rejection even at the high school level. I had never heard of that till recently. Mass numbers of people not getting into the high school that they wanted. Good kids, kids who did everything right, but didn't get that, you know, didn't get into the high school. They may have faced that at the seminary level or otherwise. But there are only so many things. We do a lot to make sure to shield our kids from getting rejected. And one of the first things that they're on the quote-unquote open market, where there's nothing we can do, we can't pull strings for them, we can't work things behind, is this. And I think it is important to, you know, as Dr. Muscat said, to talk to them about failure, about rejection, about the fact that it doesn't always go so easily. If that was your story, to share that story as well. And also to make sure that they understand, it sounds trite, but that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really the Shadchan here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really the Shadchan here. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very, very capable of finding them who they are supposed to marry. And again, it may sound fluffy, it may sound like something just to bounce off of them, but at difficult times, if we don't have our faith to fall back on, what do we have? So it's much better to introduce these ideas before things start. To say that when your daughter is crying hysterically after a number of years, it doesn't work the same way as it does when we have that conversation before the process starts. And to realize that however long that process is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that's in charge.
Thank you so much. I'll just add one thing. not that anyone needs me to add anything, but I can't help myself. And that is, before we have those conversations with our children, I could say, having been on the parent side of this, just starting, but having gone through it with one child, that before we could have had that conversation with our children, we needed to have a conversation with ourselves. There was, the phrase that I coined was that we needed a bitachon boot camp. And being a rabbi in Rebbetzin doesn't mean that you don't need the same bitachon boot camp as everybody else. We all needed to exercise those muscles and really focus our minds and our thoughts and our davening and all of it, but to really sort of get ourselves organized rather than sort of jumping in with your eyes closed and then, like Rabbi Penner mentioned, then trying to back up and have a conversation that we should have had again. I should have had an internal conversation and then, you know, worked with my husband and then had a conversation with our child. So I really think our kids, as they do from the time they're very young, take a lot of their cues from us, whether we recognize that all the time or not. And when we're afraid and we're making decisions out of fear and we're encouraging them to do things or go out with people that are not a good fit, and I learned this from Malki, who really taught us, she taught us many things, but one of the many things that she taught us was to remember that our children were reading us and that we needed to show our children that we trust them. And when they had a feeling about something, to encourage them, to trust them. Part of this process, as Dr. Muscat explained also, it really can wear down on their sense of, you know, their own sense of self. And if we're always questioning them, are you sure this isn't a good idea? You really didn't think that went well? So that furthers them in the wrong direction. We want to be building themselves. We want to help them build themselves, build their trust in themselves and their trust in us, that we have their best interests at heart. And so bitachon is a big part of that. And so is the flip side, which is not having unfounded fear, right? This is not an easy time for everyone, but it doesn't have to be a time that is filled with fear and a lack of bitachon. There is what we can do, and we have wonderful people to learn from and to guide us. Okay. Malki, you ready for another one? Okay. Can you please offer some practical ways that my child can get more and better dating suggestions? And do I have any role in this as the parent?
Thank you. Right, exactly. It was a perfect plug. So I definitely get this question a lot, and I think that the first question is whether your child wants you to help or not. And I think, like, as Dr. Muscat said, like, that's a conversation that you need to have with them, because if they don't want your help and you're feeling helpless, going behind their back and doing things probably isn't the right way to do it. So I'm going to answer this question from the standpoint that your child does want your help, and I understand the frustration of those parents, and I feel the pain of those parents who are really struggling with this, because it's very frustrating to rely on someone else to help your child. And sometimes you feel like the people that are supposed to be helping, and they say that they're helping, they really aren't. And of course, as a community matchmaker, as a connector on Why You Connect, I can tell you, like, the endless hours that go into making a date that never happens. And, you know, and of course the parents don't necessarily know all the time that went into it and nothing even came of it. So from the parent's standpoint, they feel like no one's helping, nothing's coming to fruition. And, you know, and it doesn't matter that things happen behind the scenes because they didn't see the end result. So I decided, I came up with four things that parents can do in order to help their child with, you know, getting dates. So the first one is obviously networking. And, you know, this is where when your child starts to date, you call in the troops. You don't feel shy. You call a meeting, not a formal meeting. It could just be an informal meeting with your sons, your sons-in-laws, your nephews, your son's best friend that spends all the time eating all the food in your house. You know, and you give everyone the information that they need, that they could have it at their fingertips. You give them the resume, maybe a picture, talking points, tell them stories about your daughter or your son. And the best place to start is your inner core team. because you don't feel shy with them. These are people that know your child, they have your back, and you don't have to be embarrassed to follow up with them. And they should take some of the initiative, they should take some of the burden off of you, because they're your team, they're your people. They're the ones that eat all the snacks out of your house. They have to help. Once you've started with the inner core team, you start going outward. And you think of it as if, think of it as if you're networking for your child to find a job. So don't allow yourself to feel awkward about it. If you would help your child find a job, you can figure out how to network that way. Take this task very similarly. We all have social networks. We all go to weddings. We all go to Gourmet Glatt. We all go to PTA. You know, when you see someone, if your child was looking for a job, you would go right over to them and say, oh, you're an accountant. Do you know anyone? You know, do you know where my child can go for an interview or who he could send his resume to? So just think, you're not going to cringe if you're asking for your child for a job. And just think of it, you're asking them to find, help them find the best job of their lives. So for those that are newer to the dating scene, I don't know if the parents here are newer or a little bit more experienced, but there are tons of resources. There are WhatsApp chats for parents. YUConnects has a chat called Sparks, where we post descriptions and we help make dates. We've made 5 marriages on that chat already. And WhatsApp has really grown in the last 5 years and is probably one of the leading resources, honestly, in the shidduch world nowadays. If your child feels up to it, encourage them to network for themselves. They can join a database like YUConnects or Saw You at Sinai. They can sign up for events. We have a great WhatsApp chat on YUConnects called Circle the Dates, and that posts all the reputable events in the community run by Rebbetzin Glatt. Have your child, if she's up to it, if he's up to it, go to shul, visit a friend, go to a different community, have a meal with a few people, join, do a chesed they enjoy, go to a shir. These are all things that the purpose is enjoyable, but it just opens the pathways for people to see you and think for you. Also at YUConnects, we like to encourage what we call chevra brachos. And when a friend gets engaged, their close friends will offer to make a sheva brachos, and they invite the kala's friends and the chassan's friends. And it could be very simple. It could be in the backyard, burgers, pizza, but it's just a nice way to get like-minded, similar-age young men and young women together while doing a mitzvah, and we just think it's a very natural way for people to meet on their own. Okay, so number one was networking. Number two is follow-up. After your child meets with a connector or a friend or a Rebbetzin who's going to help them, ask them how often and with what method they'd like you to follow up. Because I tell people, please WhatsApp me once a month. That's what works for me. That's my follow-up. That's the method and the amount of time that works for me. But just as important as having your child go to meet with someone is also having them follow up. Because they're not forgetting about your child, but they're constantly meeting new people and they have no way of keeping track of who is looking for dates and who is already dating. So you want them to focus their attention on the people that are looking for dates. The only way to do that is with a reminder, a positive, polite reminder. So just on that note, please be pleasant in dealing with us and in with dealing with everyone. I mean, parents most often are very complimentary and very appreciative, and everyone likes working with pleasant people. Most of the connectors at YUConnects are volunteers, and when we feel appreciated, we're so much more motivated and excited to help. We're just human. There is a community Rebbetzin, and I didn't ask her for permission, so I'm not going to say her name, but she is from one of the sponsoring shuls, who calls me regularly to say, thank you for everything you do for the community. I know how much work goes on behind the scenes. I know everything that nobody knows about, and I just want to thank you for your tireless work for our shul. And she's not calling about her daughter. Her daughter's married. She's calling just to thank me for things I do for their shul. And believe me, it just makes me want to help her shul. So just that's on follow-up. Okay. Number three. number three is encouraging your children to think of ideas for their friends. Anyone that your child has dated can be a potential match for one of their friends. And each parent can spend some time every day, just in the same way that Shadchanim do, thinking of ideas for other people's children. Hashem isn't taking away your shidduch if you help a friend. If you know, if you don't know how to run a shidduch and you're scared of that process, then do the hard work behind the scenes. Call the guy, call the girl, talk to the, you know, talk to them about the other person, get them to say a yes, and then hand it over to someone that knows what they're doing. I actually have quite a few couples that are dating right now who somebody else thought of the idea. They got the yeses, they brought it to me, they said, probably your daughter's one of them, who, you know, and they just say, like, you know, you can take it from here. And, you know, as my friend Mindy Eisenman always says, Harbei Shluchim Lamakom, Hashem has many messengers, so be one of his messengers. And then the last one, and the most important one, is really daven for your children and for other people's children. Because, as Rabbi Penner said, we can't forget that everything comes from Hashem. And we do have beautiful organizations out there that, you know, that run how to daven for each other and sponsor things. But you can do this on your own privately, because the boss of all Shadchanim is Hashem. And we're all here to assist, but ultimately we just can't lose sight of the fact that Hashem is the only one that makes shidduchim. So that's where we go.
So first of all, you're amazing.
Thank you.
So a lot also for your positive tone. The positive tone, I think, is so encouraging. I did want to just clarify, so it's not, I don't want to confuse. When I said about parents and help, so I think there's a huge role for parents in shidduchim. I don't want to, you know, confuse that. First of all, I was going to say daven. I think davening is crucial in all of this from the beginning. But the other is, what I wanted to make clear is, the area in which we should try to hold back is the direct criticisms, which is how they're going to take it. So that especially when they're feeling a little bit down. So always look for the opportunities when they're feeling, or you can almost deflect and say, you know, I know that this person did that, when you're kind of talking about another situation. You could certainly advise, and all of these suggestions I think are very, very important. The other thing I wanted to say, the same child that might not want the direct advice from you very much wants you probably to do some of that networking and some of those shidduchim and some of those questions. So I didn't mean to in any way discourage that. I think our children rely on those kinds of things, and I think it's very important to do.
The last thing I would add to that is that I am shocked how many people will ask me for help, send me a resume. I'll do what I can or can't. Unfortunately, I don't have the liberty to know most of the guys at YU. It would seem to be a very convenient thing to get a resume into my hands, but I don't have the ability to know most of the guys. But I try to do what I can to refer to the mashkichim and others. I'm shocked how many people send me a resume once and never again, and never again follow up. We expect that someone would follow up. Again, as Malki said, do it in a kind way. If that is generally done electronically, if it's done through a text, if it's done through a WhatsApp, there's really no harm in once a month putting it back on people's radar. We really do want to help, but it's very difficult, even for people like myself who aren't involved in shidduchim so much, but are involved in a million other things, to keep it at the top of our heads. And you want, that's where you need it to be, right? I think that that's fair to say. You need it to be on the top of somebody's head, so when they walk into the room and they meet somebody, that's who they think of. So please don't be shy about following up once a month by a text, an email, or something, and just a smiley face. Thanks for your help. It's really worthwhile.
Thank you so much. Okay, Rabbi Penner, I think we're up to last questions here. If my son has a medical issue that isn't obvious and won't affect his daily life, do we need to disclose it to a matchmaker or to YU Connect? Are there any halachic guidelines about this? Is it different if they are on medication for emotional issues but are very stable?
So I want to say that I'm glad that my responses have so far been very brief. Even though I don't have a child in the parsha right now, I'm really enjoying listening to the other panelists. But this one requires a couple of minutes. It really would require an entire shiur, but it is obviously a very important issue. The question of what to share, what you have to share, et cetera, it's not a new question. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid discusses this many, many, many centuries ago. And there isn't one clear answer. There isn't one clear answer, because it goes back to what I spoke to about before. Different things matter to different people. Different things matter to different people. Different things are a red line or a non-starter or an annoyance to different kinds of people. I think it's important to discuss this with someone else, particularly your rabbi, not because, I'll say it, rabbis know everything, but because this is an area where we cannot be objective. We simply cannot be objective. We want so badly to hide anything that might hurt our child in the dating process, and we're not objective. We definitely need to discuss this with somebody else. Let me try to give an answer in a very in an outline. There are different kinds of challenges. There are, let me put them into three different categories. There are issues that would be a significant concern to almost anyone. The kind of thing that many people would say, I'm not interested in dating a person if that's the situation. God forbid the person knows that they're not going to be able to have children. Things that would objectively be something that someone will, Mirza Shem, marry them, but it's very clear. So in those situations, you're probably not accomplishing very much by hiding that, either from the shadchan or from the person who's looking to date. They're not going to be surprised on the third date and say, well, you know, now that I know you. So there are things of that magnitude, which are very, very serious issues. And Mirza Shem, the person, will find a proper shidduch. But it's safe to say that anyone would want to know that. It's a very serious thing. On the opposite end, there are very, very minor issues. Issues that most people wouldn't be bothered by. And there probably is no reason to share that at all, other than the fact that anything that's hidden before the marriage can get the marriage off to a bad start when that issue comes out. Ein l'davar sof. There are things about all of us that are just not necessary to share at all, and no one would be mad that someone kept it back. But there are issues that, okay, one wouldn't necessarily not date or not marry someone who had that thing, but and therefore you don't necessarily need to tell the person even before engagement. But there probably is value in doing this at some point, just for the health of the relationship going forward. What other secrets did you not share with me? Most other issues fall somewhere in between. That it matters. It matters more to some people than others. And it depends on who this person is and how much I think of the person otherwise. And there, we sort of have a system, whether it's the third date, whether it's the fourth date, the dreaded third date, when there is an understanding that you don't have to reveal everything right up front. And on the third date, on the fourth date, on one of those dates, and again, you have to speak to your local shadchan or connector more than the rabbi to know which date it is, but you want to consult, to reveal things like that. And again, even if it's something an emotional issue that's controlled by medicine, but you know, again, those things people generally want to know about. Do people have very, very happy marriages? Are they very happy to go forward that way? Yes. But that's probably not something that's a non-starter for 90% of the people. But it's also something that is a significant factor, and it probably should be brought up at some point. I want to throw out one other thing. There is a reason why we don't say everything on the first date. There is a reason why we don't say everything on the first date, because people do deserve a chance to form a relationship before, again, that middle category, which is many, many types of things, that middle category is revealed. For that reason, it bothers me a lot as a reference when people ask me the following question: is there anything you know about the person? Is there any medical anything? Is there anything there? Now, the challenge I have is I don't like to lie, so I'm kind of put on the spot. But that's not the way the dating process is supposed to go. We're not supposed to reveal any issue before the first date. And I generally try to, it's hard, because if I don't answer the question directly, they assume there's something very bad. If I answer it directly, then I take away that person's opportunity to make a good first impression and begin that relationship. Don't ask that question. It will come out. It will come out. Those issues will come out. They'll be, worst comes to worst, your child will have gone on a date and they'll have learned more about themselves and more learned about somebody else. But those issues will come out. Finally, one of the roles of a rabbi or a connector shadchan is to make sure that certain things do come out, certainly by the time of engagement. Moshe speaks about the fact that it's simply a mekachtos, it's a false type of transaction. If you get to that point, certainly you get to the point of marriage, but in our world, it's really the point of engagement, without bringing up something like that. If you have to be sure if your child has such an issue. You have to be sure as a rabbi or as a shadchan, if you know the person has such an issue, that to check with them and say very specifically, did you discuss this yet? Because it's hard, and we don't want to bring that forward. So again, it really comes down to the category. There are major, major, major issues which are rare, but almost anyone would say that is a real issue for me in terms of marrying a person. Those, it probably pays to say up front. I don't know that halachically one must, but it's just smart to bring that up front, to let the shadchan or the connector actually know that so they can know what they're dealing with and be able to find the right person. There are the most minor of things, the more of which can be shared. We never share everything, and that's okay. But the majority of which, you know, is good to share. And it's good to do that, to share those kinds of things, not during the week of Shavuot Brachos, but beforehand. And then there's the middle category, where it's a reasonable illness. It's something where the common custom in our community is to go into it a couple of dates, and then to be sure the person says something.
No, I was just going to just echo what Rabbi Penner said, and that is one of the roles of the shadchan is to, often we don't know what the issues are, and we're very grateful that we don't know what the issues are. When they're very large issues, we sometimes do, but we'll have a discussion with them in advance and saying, when are you planning on revealing this? And then we check in with them to make sure that it's happened. But we do always kind of give that little push. After the fourth or fifth date, when it's at the point at which we're talking about genetic testing and we're dropping the shadchan, I also say this is the point at which it's time to discuss anything that you would need to reveal to the person. You know, we can talk about how to say it, we can work on the language, we can work on making it less scary. I think you don't have to hype it up, and it feels a lot less scary. And then you see how the person receives it, and often that really makes like a good connection. You know, when someone receives it in a very calm way, in a very comforting way, and, you know, then you see that this is someone that you may really have potential for a relationship with. So I think it's not only the revealing, it's also seeing how the other person receives it, and that's, you know, part of connecting in the relationship.
I really wanted to echo all of those, and just to give a little bit of a different perspective or an additional perspective about the mental health pieces of this. I think we as parents of somebody who might be having some kind of in the medium categories, or somebody who hears that somebody that our child is dating has one of these, I think it's important to widen the scope of the question. It's not, does he or she have something? I couldn't agree more with that. There's other questions to ask. What's their relationship with this thing that they may have, whether it's anxiety, let's just go with that one. Are they aware of it? Are they self-aware? Do they go for help? Are their parents aware of it? Those things could end up making so much more of a difference. We also want to, you know, anxiety versus a personality disorder, right? We want to kind of look at like what's actually important in a person. And I think we know these things, but we can get very carried away. Is the person resilient? Is the person kind in dealing with other people? Is the person able to take another person's point of view? People who have certain personality difficulties, whether they may not have a diagnosis, but that can make life so much more difficult. So, and I have to give credit, to our community, I really have to say, you know, at least from what I see of our Yeshiva University students, which is much of what I see, they do tend to have an open mind. They do try to be kind about these things. But I think sometimes we as parents can get very frightened. So it's not so much do they or don't they, at least for the middle things, it's more what's their relationship with it. At the same time, you have to know yourself. If it's not something that works for your child, or it's okay to walk away from something, it's also okay to do that. You don't have to take on something that you don't feel that you can handle. So that's kind of what I wanted to add.
Amazing. We are coming to the end of our time, so I think rather than asking one more question, maybe the panelists want to share one final thought, one take-home message, one last, idea, chizuk.
Okay. Okay, so I think that we've been discussing here how dating is difficult. You know, I think that that's pretty much what we're hearing, is that there's a lot that goes into it and dating is difficult. And we can really get down about it. But my close friend and mentor, Rebbetzin Efrat Sobolewski, she always reminds me that worthwhile things come with hard work. And I think that's the most important message to remember, and an important message to give to our children, that relationships can be beautiful, but they may be hard, and they may take a lot of work. And the process of dating is hard and may sometimes seem impossible, but anything worthwhile takes a lot of effort. And Emirat Hashem, my bracha, not that that means anything, but my bracha to everyone here is that all the parents in this room will soon see the beautiful and the rewarding outcomes for all their children who are looking for their basher, and that next year, let there be a totally new group of parents in this room for this panel.
Thank you very much. I guess the closing thing that I would say is that I met my wife in Camp Hask, which still works for some people, less for others. We were both senior staff, so we actually got seated at the same table for the entire summer, so it was going to happen. And my wife and I are very open about the fact that we would never have dated each other had we seen each other's resumes. Had we been set up, it would simply not have been. We thought we were looking for something else. 30 some odd years later, thank God we weren't set up and we got to meet at a table in Camp Hask. So please, please try to encourage your children. It's a very difficult world we live in. Everything that they choose from Amazon, they choose from a set of things they have, they can compare. What you can compare all the products right next to each other and all this and that. It's simply not the way relationships work. Relationships are not about the things that are on the paper. Relationships are things that are beyond that. And the more that we can encourage them to just give it a chance, and to try to meet it, you're dating a neshama. A neshama is not going to appear on the resume. Again, as Malki said, it's just a couple of talking points. A person's neshama does not come through on the resume. And we could miss the right person if we are simply too caught up in all of those details.
Okay, no, just in closing, I also did want to say that I know we're talking a lot about it, hardships. I think we do need to try and see this as neutral to positive sometimes. I do say to a lot of the young women I work with, like, let's just see if we can have a neutral approach to the dating if we're not able to have a positive approach. Like, it's not positive, it's not amazing, it's not awful. It's like something a little bit, I hate to say that we have to do it this way, but something like you have to do. It's like a little bit of a job. You don't have to necessarily, you know, so if we could do that and hopefully also appreciate, you know, some of the good times of it. It's not all terrible. But I think the other thing I did want to mention we were going to talk about is how triggering it can be for us as parents. Whatever your histories in your family or of dating or your relationship with these kinds of concepts, whether it's the rejection piece or worrying about finances or worrying about conflict, or if you're a people pleaser kind of a thing, I don't mean that in a negative way. If it's hard for you for people to, you know, you want everybody to like you, and then, or, you know, and then your daughter's going out with somebody or your son, and you know, you want them to also just please the other person. You know, that's also probably like the wrong filter for things. Things can really trigger us. So I think the more we can be aware of those self triggers, I think it's really important to have confidants, friends, support, somebody that you can turn to. I know who mine are. And, you know, before I go and I say something, or when I'm really like finding myself like ruminating, which, you know, we all do, just have someone to turn to help you along with it. And never feel that you're alone. Whatever you're going through, there's other people going through it as well. And to just try and maintain as much of a positive attitude as we can.
Thank you all so much. I'm going to turn the floor over to Rebbetzin Glatt, but I really just want to echo all of the thank yous. And you don't need me to tell you how amazing our panelists were, but I'm so grateful for both the personal support I have received from some of the people at this table, the communal support that we really are all, we're zocha to have, ashreinu. We are very fortunate that as we go through this we'll just call it a journey, not negative, not positive, but a journey that we have such strong system of support. So thank you really to all of you for your wisdom and your insight and for joining us tonight. And thank you to Rebbitz and Glatt.
Terrific. Thank you. Thank you, Rebbitz and Freundlich, Rabbi Penner, Malki Galler, Dr. Muscat. A round of applause for our panelists, please.